Beloved MTV VJ, music exec, and radio personality Matt Pinfield has spent almost four decades in front of and behind the mic. He signed bands, interviewed Beatles, and had songs written about him. But now, he's having a different conversation. He's talking with friends and supporters across the entertainment industry about their journey and how he's found his voice again, being open about his recovery. This is Sound, Sobriety, and Success.
Today, I want to start out the episode by reading from Rolling Stone, a true story that is so alarming and yet amazingly inspiring to not only those of us that are in recovery, but to everyone. So I want to tell you about this. Jeff Sands is our guest today, and he got home late the night of June 1st, 2021. He had spent a long day at Modern Electric Sound Recorders, the recording studio that he owns in Dallas, Texas. And he was settling in with his family when the power went out a little after 10 p.m., like many of his neighbors up and down the street, Sands stepped outside to investigate. And what happened next nearly killed him. While walking through his yard, he came in contact with a downed electric line. Jeff, this story is unbelievable. Yeah. And I'm going to stop right there and ask you, Jeff, to continue with telling us the story of what happened next.
Well, let me start by saying that I think that kind of what has hit so many people about my story, my family story, is how normal everything was. It's just such an average night at home. Power went out and, you know, we were lighting candles around the house and just trying to find flashlights. And I just went out the front door just to see what was going on. We live on kind of a thoroughfare for our side of town. And I can kind of see, you know, up and down the street, and usually can kind of get a gauge on what's going on. And so I figure I walked out, you know, into the front yard out towards the sidewalk to kind of see what was going on. And I remember it was pitch black, like the darkest I've ever seen my neighborhood. Could barely see your hand in front of your face. And that's really the last thing that I remember. The next thing I remember is Monica, my fiance, and a couple other people, some neighbors, standing over me, and I was trying to pick myself up off the ground and was aware that something had happened, but I didn't know quite what. And I was trying to pick myself up off the ground, and there's, you know, Monica was saying, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, baby, don't try to pick yourself up, you know, or don't try to get up. Ambulance is on the way, you know." And then from there, it's just a big blur. I ended up being put into a medically induced coma for about 2 weeks and, you know, came to, like I said, about 2 weeks after the accident, which I have to note, I just put this together. Today is the year and a half anniversary of the accident.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So at that point you were in the hospital, and then, and when did you realize, you know, that things had changed for you, that you had burns over almost all of your body at that period of time? And
it was kind of, I came to with Monica at my side, and she was quick to try to give me a little bit of a heads up on what was going on. She said, you know, "Hey, baby, you've been in an accident. You know, you came into contact with the power line. They had to amputate your left hand." And as soon as she said that, I remember just kind of looking over, seeing my left arm all wrapped up with no hand, you know? And that was kind of this immediate fork in the road for me, you know, what's the path forward mentally, emotionally, you know? Yeah. Am I pissed off about this? Am I angry? Am I like, what emotions do I put into play right now? And it was kind of like this fight or flight moment. And I think that the, you know, everybody's entitled to whatever feelings they have in a situation like this or any other situation that's traumatic. But for me, I chose to push forward. It was just all about this happened. I can't undo it. You know, how do I push forward? I think that it's a mindset that I've adopted over really kind of since I've quit drinking and everything was real, you know, I mean, it's really serenity prayer stuff, you know, just to accept the things you cannot change and
figure out and work through them and, you know, exactly. And move on, which is amazing because to go through what you went through. You know, the story that I've been told is, you know, that you had, there was a, you know, the electric power line was in your hands, and that Monica came out and actually pulled you off and knocked you down to get, because you were like, you know, you were literally frozen. And it was, how many volts was that, did they say?
They say it was about 8,000 volts.
8,000 volts. It was continuously going through you,
which is
amazing. It's such a beautiful miracle that you survived that. And, you know, but then to end up losing your hands and your arms was just, I mean, that's to go through that. That's the beauty to me, that, you know, to have gone through this tragedy in your life and then continuing on with such positivity. And, you know, you haven't literally had a drink in 8.5 years. You haven't done any, you know, narcotics or hard drugs or anything like that in 9 years or so.
Yeah.
And that's incredible, because something like that would definitely trigger someone to get off the wagon. And certainly this incident, one in particularly. Was there ever a feeling at that point where did you just know, like, look, I love my wife. I love my kids. I'm going to find a way through this. I mean,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There was actually Monica had, you know, through one of these companies that you can have just about anything in the world printed on anything, you know, she had this big, like, door size poster printed out that was a photo shoot that we had done with a friend of ours for probably for a Christmas card or something like that, you know? And it was the four of us, you know, Monica, Jude, Lola, and myself, and all of our dogs and our cat, you know, on the front porch of our house. And we're all happy and smiling. And that was hanging up on the back door of the bathroom in my ICU room. So on the back of the door in my bathroom in the ICU room. So I just had a clear view of that right from my bed all day long, every day. And that was just like my constant reminder, like, that's what I'm working towards. That's where I'm going. That's what I need to get back to. So it was just kind of at that point, it was like, okay, how do I do this? I got to do all the work that they put in front of me. It's going to be hard. It's going to suck. It's going to hurt probably, but you know, I need to get back there. I can't, you know, can't stay in this bed forever. So
yeah. And the courage that you've shown and the example that you made, will be inspiring to anyone, you know. You know, like in recovery and stuff, we talk about like one day at a time, or many of us even subscribe to 5 minutes at a time.
Absolutely.
Especially when you're white knuckling it and you're going through a period where you just don't want to pick up a line, or you don't want to pick up a drink, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, in saying that, you know, I understand that you've been focused on getting through events that would have been partying triggers before, like, you know, your birthday or New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
You lost your best friend.
Yes.
You know, and his funeral that you go through these triggering examples. Talk about that mindset and focus and that commitment that works for you when those kind of challenges come on.
I mean, it was really all kind of accidental for me. And I'm really grateful for everything that happened. And it's given me a really strong example or talking point with anybody who's kind of come to me looking for some advice about how to kind of clean their life up a little bit. But, you know, I started, things were just messy. My ex and I just, we just weren't doing good, and things were starting to get dangerous, you know. My drinking and all of that was just not conducive to any sort of positive progression in my life. And I was recognizing that. So I decided I was going to take a couple weeks off, is what I told myself, you know. And to me at the time, I think that was what I could wrap my mind around, you know. And like you were saying, there were these kind of events that just kind of happened to line up in that timeline, that happened to be things like, you know, ACL Music Festival, something I usually would have partied my way through, you know. And then it was my birthday and Halloween in New Orleans and a big family trip to Colombia to visit my family, and then Christmas and New Year's. And then fast forward, like you're saying, my best friend Jeremy passed away just right around the 6 month mark of my sobriety, my cleaning myself up, you know. And that was this kind of turning point. It was this point where I feel like anybody at that point would have probably applauded my 6 months as this nice round number of time served that I put in to cleaning myself up, you know. And most people would have said, hey man, you know, your best friend just died. Like, it's okay. Have a drink. And I just decided not to. And because I decided not to, I got to witness myself processing that grief in the way that we're all meant to, you know, in order, all of the steps of grief, everything kind of played itself out the way it was supposed to. And it was so much more peaceful. And I felt so much stronger coming through the other end of that. It was really empowering and really fortifying to see how I could navigate something like that, that I've never now, I mean, in my adult life, I've never navigated a loss like that without drinking or drugs or anything like that, you know? So, I mean, after that, it was a matter of like, okay, man, let's try to go a year. It was no longer kind of these shorter milestones. It really changed the narrative for me, you know?
And it's great because as you do right now, you know, you focused on your love of family and your work because you're such a lover of music and you work in sound. And I want to go back a little bit and talk about that because tell me about your journey through music because it's so important to let everybody know about that. When did you get interested in music, get interested in production, playing? What was the thing that brought you that? Tell me about it. I mean, you can go back to your childhood. What was that thing or that artist or a succession of events that made you realize you wanted to work in sound and in music?
My first memory really of music is just, I used to love the sound of the cannons on Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture. So I would go into my dad's record. He had a really modest record collection, maybe, I don't know, 30 records, 20 records, kind of in one of those, you know, those glass push button kind of like the 70s, 80s kind of component rack cases, you know?
Yeah.
So I'd pop that glass door open and I'd fish that record out and bring it over to my parents to have them put it on, you know, and that was my kind of like falling in love with music. And, you know, you fast forward to my kind of late grade school years. And I remember, you know, these two brothers that lived across the street, their dad had a guitar. It was, you know, it just fascinated me. And we had a piano in the house growing up, but I really didn't grow up in a musical family at all. The piano was kind of almost obligatory, I feel like, at that time period in suburban U.S., you know?
Yeah, universal instrument. A lot of times pianos, absolutely. Yeah.
So I was just fascinated with rock and roll by the time I was in probably like third, fourth grade, and the babysitters that would come over and watch my sister and I would, you know, I remember one of them he had an Iron Maiden t-shirt and made me wonder who Iron Maiden was, you know, and I got a stereo. My sister and I both got stereos for Christmas one year, and that kind of began the real journey. I didn't really have any resources to tell me what was what or who was who, so I was just taking these blank cassettes and just recording off of I think it was KLOS was the station that I found. And I was just trying to like figure it out. Like I remember hearing the name Jimi Hendrix. So when I heard something that sounded like what I thought Jimi Hendrix was, I hit record. And that ended up being Sympathy for the Devil, you know? But I figured it all out eventually. And I got into middle school and learned all so much more from all my friends there and started my first band in middle school and never stopped. Fast forward to my early 20s, I ended up in a band called Death on Wednesday that we were assigned to a subsidiary of Vagrant Records, and we toured with Social Distortion, Face to Face, Unwritten Law, bands like that, and we did pretty good. That was kind of the beginning of the quote unquote kind of professional side of music for me.
And you played in bands for a while, and then when did you realize that you wanted to get into the production side of things in studios? Because you obviously immediately, as a child, were attracted to sound.
Yes, absolutely. That was kind of a couple bands later. After a couple bands later, a band called The Strays that I was in, our album was produced by Dave Cobb.
Who's now like won so many Grammys. And Dave Cobb is like, you know, one of the biggest country and rock music producers right now in Nashville. And you were in a band, The Strays. That's when I met you the first time, which is crazy. You were up at Columbia Records. I was doing A&R. Yeah. And you guys were meeting with Greg Boggs, who was my great friend. Love the guy. You know, he's up in Greg was Toronto, awesome. Canada. Yes. Yeah. He's just like, you know, he was one of my brothers there at Columbia Records. And we had offices right next to each other.
Yep.
And you were in a band there with at the time with Steve Marriott of Humble yeah. Pie and Small Faces Faces fame, his son. So talk yep. to me about that.
Yeah. So that was actually the band that we made the record with Dave. And that was, yeah, Toby Marriott, who was just in town visiting actually. So yeah, we made that record with Dave and we did some awesome thing. We got to tour with the Buzzcocks and the Cult and Veruca Salt and the Slackers and just all sorts, just a kind of a wide swath of different vibes of bands. But after that band kind of fell apart, we ultimately ended up signing to TVT Records. And after things kind of fell apart with TVT and us, I was in this kind of soul searching place where I was like, you know, what do I do now, man? I'm kind of coming up on, you know, I'm coming into my 30s and I've kind of had some luck, had a couple record deals and done some great tours and stuff. But how many more times am I going to be able to make that work? Is there something else in the music industry? And I started thinking about it all. And I started thinking about management and, you know, our lawyer and all these different people that were on the team that kind of was part of the making all of this stuff happen, you know? And I thought about Dave and I was like, man, this guy gets to hang out and be in basically a different band every 2-3 weeks, month, whatever the workflow is, write songs, make rock and roll records. Like, that sounds like a dream, you know? And to be surrounded by all these cool guitars and drums and that's just like, you know, I mean, that's kind of like for someone who's like a bibliophile, that would be like their equivalent of a library. You know, for me, it was like, I just want to be around all of this stuff, you know? And I instantly started gravitating towards the production side of things and getting really fascinated with all that. And, you know, Dave was really gracious and gave me a gig as kind of a intern / assistant for him. And I kind of grew in that role over the time that I was with him and learned so much from him and the engineers that were working under him and or for him. And eventually was able to kind of start my own little modest home studio. And he started kind of sending me some work. I think the first thing that he sent me was to do the vocals for what is now the first Rival Sons record. So he had already tracked all the music and done everything, but then they changed singers and got Jay Buchanan, you know.
Who's such a great singer, by the way, right?
Oh my God. The first time I heard him sing in there, it was mind blowing. So, so that was the kind of the beginning of the whole thing. And it's just built on itself ever since then. I've just been really dedicated to keeping on moving forward, you know?
I love that. You're a musician, so you do understand what that's about because you've toured. You know what I mean? You have love for that. And it's great to hear about Dave Cobb because, you know, I've heard he's such a great guy. And we met once, you know, he was working at NRG Studios for a record. He was doing for a short time. We hung out for a bit, but, you know, I know his manager, Andrew. Very well. Andrew's a great guy. I've known Andrew for a long time. So, and then I've just heard from everybody. But I love knowing that he was so giving and generous and wanted to help, you know, nurture your love of production and get there. And that's so important. When you hear that, it makes you really appreciate people.
He's really, I think that, and I've tried to tell him over the years, I don't know that he fully grasps it, but he has had such an impact on my life. Like, not just in the music side of things, the studio that I worked at of his was really kind of, I don't know if you'd call it a basement, but it was this kind of big storage area that he had converted into this beautiful studio at his house in Silver Lake.
Yeah.
And so I worked at his home, you know, and I already knew his wife, but I got to really get a lot closer to her and Lydia and, you know, got to know his daughter when she was really young and just got to kind of witness the whole kind of dichotomy of his life to a certain extent, you know? And it was just like, man, this is what I want. This is incredible. He's got an awesome family and a beautiful home for his family. And he gets to do this every day. And, you know, I mean, he's been more than an inspiring character to me for sure. So.
Yeah. I love that. I'm sure you were just as happy as everybody was knowing what a great guy he is and having that personal relationship with him.
Yeah.
when he was winning all the Grammys and producer of the year and Billboard and all these other things. So it's just something that's really nice to see. How much do you enjoy? I mean, you still love recording, and I know you record a lot of artists down in your studio there. So and that's one. How has that been a challenge? You know, with having lost your hands and your arms, how have you adjusted to the recording side of things with that?
I'm still really figuring it all out, to be honest. The songs and the songwriting hasn't left me. Like, I still have that inside me. I'm still able to contribute on that front with the artists that I'm still lucky enough to work with. The engineering is something that it's just such a tactile thing, man. It's like, and it's such the pace is, I think, where the real hiccup is. In order to be in this industry and be competitive as an engineer, which was really kind of the majority of my career was as an engineer prior to my accident, you know, you've got to be quick and you've got to be agile. You know, you've got to be able to, you know, switch the mic on a kick drum or get a piano set up or whatever it may be quickly. And I'm just not able to do that. And I'm also not able to, you know, use a mouse or a keyboard. That part's been challenging. I've had to hire engineers for anything that I have done in the studio in the last year. And that's something that's kind of, it's new for me, but it's been really interesting too, because I've been able to kind of, you know, I'm not one to try to like micromanage what these guys are doing either. You know, I kind of want to allow them to have their artistic space in the process too.
Kind of like Dave did with you, right? I mean,
it was exactly,
which is great. That's cool. You know, I got to ask you with that role in music played, going through everything that you went through, was there any music in particular besides the, you know, having your family, which is so beautiful and their support and all your friends who love you, was there any music or artists in particular or stuff that helped you get through that period?
Yeah, kind of. Interestingly enough, in the hospital, for one reason or another, well, there are a couple reasons, I didn't really listen to much music for the 10 weeks that I was in there. Biggest reason would probably be that I did not have, you know, Siri or these things figured out yet in a way that I was able to. And I mean, honestly, you know, my priorities were just like not on figuring Siri out at that point.
Right, exactly.
But I just didn't have things like that figured out to where I could do things like that on my own. So it would have required me getting a nurse in there, something like that, to turn something on for me. And I already, man, these people work so hard and they're already doing so much for me that I was hesitant to ask them to change the channel on the TV, let alone, you know, put headphones on me and connect the Bluetooth and do this and do that. And da, da, da. It just was kind of not really at the forefront of things for the time I was in the hospital. But the one band that, I mean, we listened to them, we put them on, the surgeons would put them on. They'd ask me who I wanted to listen to in the OR, even though I was going to be knocked out. And a couple times also in my ICU room when they were doing certain procedures in there, the recurring band would be the War on Drugs.
Yeah, War on Drugs are great. I mean, you know, they're incredible from Philly, you know?
Yes, my favorite band, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's great. You know, it's interesting how music just plays a part in giving us strength, you know, besides the people that are in our lives, you know? And whatever that happens to be. Now, it's so important, you know, in recovery to have that solid foundation of support, you know, and be it family, friends. If you're in the program, a sponsor, you know, certainly a higher power of some sort. And sometimes that higher power is God to some and to others. Like one of my best friends who's got 35 years sober, he goes, a higher power can be any person you put between you and that first drink or that first line. In other words, that person that is there to inspire you.
Absolutely.
Which is a beautiful thing. But, you know, let's talk about how great, you know, Monica and the children have been through this. Like, I know you mentioned it before, but it's such an important part of your life, having real love, unconditional love that way.
Yes. Yes. The most important part of my life, for sure. It's unbelievable. And I mean, if there's been a silver lining to this whole thing, it's been the amount of downtime I've had to be able to spend with Lola. Jude is, you know, he's a teenager. He's off doing his own thing all the time. But to be able to be here with my family, I'm probably driving Monica crazy with how much I've been at the house. But they were my biggest inspiration and motivation to get home. And Monica's strength through all of this has just been like unwavering. You know, we all have our moments where we just kind of just need a little, we need to just lock ourselves away for a minute and just get a little reprieve from whatever it is that's going on. But I mean, dude, her strength has been just like inspirational to me, for me to keep going, because I know how much she's having to pick up. I know what I, you know, what my kind of daily expectations, chores, jobs, whatever for the family, for the house, or whatever were prior to this. And I know how much she's had to undertake with all that, you know, for things that physically I just can't do these days. So, I mean, massively inspiring, massively.
Yeah. And you inspire me, Jeff. I got to tell you that, you know, I really, you know, since it's amazing getting reacquainted with you, you know, through Kara, and it's incredible. And I want to say, speaking of things that are amazing, just after about 3 months after the accident, you were back on stage performing profoundly the Little Feat classic with your self-titled debut album, a song called Willing.
Yeah.
Willing. Tell me about Willing. I love old Little Feet. So
Willing's, I love it, man. Lil George.
Yeah. Lil George was so cool. So great.
So good. It's a song that I used to sing with a group that I used to be part of called the Texas Gentlemen. And, you know, we would do these long sets kind of with, you know, originals and covers kind of scattered throughout. And that was one of the ones that I used to sing from the group. And, you know, when the band, the Texas Gentlemen, put that show together, they asked me if I wanted to sing something. I was like, man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to. The intubation in the hospital had really screwed up my vocal cords and throat. I didn't know how permanent any of that was. And, you know, I didn't even know if I was going to have the stamina to just be there at the show at all, let alone until the end, you know? So it kind of came closer to the end of the night, and a good friend of ours, Rick Bowden, who's just amazing, he came up to me, and in this little box where me and my family were seated, and he said, "Hey man, are you going to sing tonight?" And I was like, "You know what? I think I'm going to try, you know?" And he goes, "Okay." And he ran downstairs, and I think he told the band and came back up, and he said, "All right, it's time to go, you know?" And he helped me down the stairs and to the backstage, and you know, when it was time, I went out there. I didn't know if I was going to be able to squeak out a note, really, you know? And in hindsight, it was maybe one of the most important things I've done in my life. Just getting them on that stage that night and being able to look out at all of the faces there supporting my family and I, and just being able to sing that song, which I chose because I felt like I felt like it just really, really kind of conveyed the message of just like, keep on trucking. You know what I mean? Yeah. Just keep going, dude. You got to. And I got up on stage. I mean, it was just incredible. Just surrounded by, you know, some of my most talented friends, Charlie Sexton and Shaky Graves and the Texas Gentlemen. It's just incredible. Unbelievable.
That is so great. Yeah, man. Oh, Charlie's such a good dude. He just did an Archangels show recently. Friend I went to.
Yeah. Super, super cool.
He's so cool. And, you know, I worked on this Bowie live stream with him, and just like last year. And I've always been such a big fan of Charlie's. You know, Shaky Graves too, right? So good.
So good. And both of them are just such sweethearts, you know?
Yeah. And tell me about Jeff Fest.
The first one or the second one? Because there were two.
Well, tell me about them. Yeah, tell me about them both.
Okay, so the first one happened while I was still in the ICU. And so I was obviously not in attendance, but I was able to live stream it and kind of, you know, service kind of cut in and out, but I was able to catch, you know, a good chunk of the show and, you know, Paul Coffin and David Ramirez, Jonathan Tyler, Sir Woman. It's just like such a huge list of awesome bands. About You, who's a band that I've been really, really deeply, deeply involved with. It's really the songwriter, Max Vicente, and myself have been collaborating on that project for a few years now. Matthew Logan Vasquez from Delta Spirit.
Yeah, Matthew's great.
Yeah. Thomas.
And David Ramirez, I always go to see when he comes to LA too. Oh, I love him.
David's fantastic. You know?
Yeah, he's great.
So yeah, just like an incredible cast of people. And I mean, it really seemed, from what I was able to see and everything that everyone's told me since then, just like a really, really magical night. They did it at this bar here in town that it was kind of like my spot when I was a drinker. So,
yeah. Yeah. We all have those, you know.
Oh, yeah. So it's called the Double Wide, and you know, is kind of a perfect setting for this whole thing. And just like so much love and so much work went into this whole thing. You know, they had the folks from Luck Reunion, Matt Visor, he offered to video the whole thing and to help live stream it and do this whole deal. There's just so many people came together to make this event happen. And from everything that I've heard, it's just like, you know, the stars kind of aligned in it, and everything worked out. You know, they were given tattoos in the parking lot and just all sorts of stuff. It looked amazing to me. The second Jet Fest was held at one of our theaters here in Dallas called the Granada Theater. It's kind of like, you know, rite of passage for any North Texas artist. And it's definitely a big tour stop for a ton of great artists there, you know. But yeah, the second Jet Fest was a whole other kind of all day event, you know, just amazing, both of them. And, you know, they raised a significant amount of money for our family to be able to sustain ourselves while I wasn't able to work. It was, you know, I was able to pay the rent at the studio and keep the doors open at this, you know, magical place I'm so lucky to be the steward of right now, you know. So
that's the beauty of when you see friends in a musical community of people that band together for a friend and do things for, I mean, that's the most amazing thing about community in the music community when people do that. And I think it's so great that they did that for you. And I just love everybody that got involved and did that. I think it's just, I'm glad that was good. And, you know, and I'm just so glad you're back to working on music again and doing what you do and love the best, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely been a savior for me, for, you know, a big part of who I kind of feel I am, you know.
How's it been? You have like you have one limb now, right? That you work with. Is it like a prosthetic, or is it what do you use?
Yeah, so I've got one for my left arm. I have it's called a myoelectric, is the technology really. So it's myoelectric hand. And how it works is you've got these electrodes that correspond to these muscles on your arm. When they did the amputation, they did this procedure called TMR, which is targeted muscle reintervention, where they take the nerves that your brain associates with these certain functions in your hand, and they reattach them to muscles, to other muscles, you know? So when I make like I can still feel my hands, like my ghost hands is what I call them, you know? So yeah. I make like, albeit they feel like they're like in like quick drying cement or the thickest molasses in the world. They, you know, I can feel them and I can move them. So if I make like an opening motion with my left hand, you know, it flexes this muscle on the outside of my forearm. If I make a closing motion, then it flexes a muscle on the inside of my forearm. And those muscles correspond to those electrodes that are on the inside of the piece that fits over my arm, you know? So I make that opening motion. It hits the electrode. Electrode sends a signal to the hand. Hand opens, you know?
Yeah.
And there's more functions to it than that, but that's the basics of it, you know? The right side, I just had a surgery 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. Went in for kind of what was supposed to be an outpatient procedure. They did that, realized they could do a lot more, kept me overnight and did a pretty major procedure the next day where they took another muscle from my back, put it into my axilla or my armpit, and did a whole bunch of other stuff while they were there. And that has given me a lot more range of motion in my right arm, which was pretty bound up. And that will allow me to have something for my right side, you know, very soon now.
Yeah. I mean, it's fantastic. It's really, truly amazing and inspiring you to be back to work as a craftsman of musicianship, you know, and producing so quickly. You know, even if you do it in those alternative ways, the way you're working, but your spirit is the thing that just like it motivates me in such an incredible way. And I feel like it would motivate anybody that's listening, because it's just that spirit that keeps you marching on and going forward. And because of love of family and the love of life, you know, and being alive and music, which is so great. So I just want to tell you how much that means to me.
Well, thanks, man.
And I'm sure everybody listening, you know,
there's just too much. I mean, man, you know, life's tricky, but there's just too much to do to lie down right now, you know? So
yeah,
I just, and with music, you know, it's just so ingrained in my soul. It's like, you know, I can't imagine not participating in making music to some degree. I'm lucky I can still sing, so I still have a place on a stage somewhere. And there, you know, there's all sorts of things that people are constantly pointing out. And, you know, there's attachments I can get for these prosthetics to hopefully let me play the drums, you know, is kind of what I'm thinking. And other people have said, well, have you thought about like steel guitar where you're kind of holding a slide bar? And there's all sorts of ideas out there. I'm just happy to be able to participate at all. So
yeah.
Anything on top of that is bonus. And as far as the other stuff, you know, I played guitar in bands forever, like we talked about, and I got to tour opening for the bands that I worshiped growing up. I mean, Social D was hugely inspirational to me. I grew up in Orange County, you know.
So, and Mike Ness is a legend in Orange County, and what a great songwriter and person he is. And absolutely. Also very, very active and open and about his sobriety, and he's, you know, he's been doing great for a long time, and he's very, very giving individual, and man, I love the guy, you know. So and I'm glad he's still out there rocking and doing great, as he always does.
Him and Two Bags have been really great.
Johnny Two Bags.
Oh, Johnny's just great. Him and I, you know, we messaged quite a bit back and forth, and you know, they donated an acoustic guitar that they had signed to auction and to help raise funds for the family, and you know, it's just. They're just great guys. I got to tour opening for them, and I worshiped those guys growing up. They were just like, they were my favorite band when I was, you know, in high school and beyond. So it's hard for me to be mad about not being able to play the guitar, because I've gotten to do so much. It's hard to be upset about not being able to do more when I've gotten to do such incredible things. I got to play guitar for Kris Kristofferson. I got to, like I said, tour with the Buzzcocks, and you know.
Yeah, they're one of my favorite bands of the punk era, you know. Oh,
absolutely. Just to be able to participate, like I said, man, that's just like, that's key for me, for sure.
And that would be, you know, we call this podcast Sound Sobriety and Success. And success for me has never, it can be about a lot of things. And we're not pointing out a financial thing. We're talking about the success of overcoming, surviving, you know. Addictions and alcoholism and learn to live, and what you've been through and overcome is absolutely incredible. And I just wanted to say that to you. When you look at the word success, what does that mean to you? It's an evolving thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, definitely through my life, it's meant different things. You know, at one point it might've meant success would have meant signing a record deal or how many units we sold opening week or whatever, you know. But really, success to me is just being able to provide, you know, a comfortable, happy life for my family, and being able to, like I said, just kind of be involved in music and be surrounded by these inspirational characters that I'm so lucky to be surrounded by. My partner at the studio, Bo Bedford, he's just like kind of like an angel, man. He's the one that put on that organized Jeff Fest One, and people like him and so many other just great friends that have just, you know, that's success, you know, looking at this whole community that helped provide for my family and was dropping off meals at the door. And I, you know, looking in my ICU room, I had, because it's the burn unit and you've got so many open wounds, they won't let you have real flowers. Okay. So, but we could have like fake flowers, silk flowers, whatever. So there were just like 30 of these like flower arrangements in the window of my ICU room, and just like, you know, dozens and dozens of cards hanging on the wall, you know, and it's inspiring. You know, that's success, you know, to have had such a positive, I don't know how, I'm just trying to get through the days, trying to do the right thing every day as much as I can. And some days I'm better than others, you know, but just to see that kind of ripple effect of the community in Dallas with such a, just all of this positivity, that's like, man, that's a huge check mark for success, you know?
100%. That's how I feel about it. And again, just the fact that, you know, going back to the original idea of what, you know, the reasoning behind this show is, you know, those things that could be triggers and just, you know, getting through those and not going back to drinking or doing hard drugs or anything. It's just, it's amazing. And it's inspiration. Anybody who may be struggling or just like, I mean, I think it's incredible. So I so appreciate, Jeff, you sharing your story with us today. Hey, and one of the final things I want to ask you is, what are some of your favorite albums of all time? Because I always like to ask people. Man. I mean, you could name 10 if you want. I don't, or a few, but I'm just curious. What are those records?
I would say on the all time list, it's, I mean, some of these I haven't listened to in quite some time, but just the ones that just really stick out. Danzig 2, Lucifuge.
That's, yeah.
Like that was always been a big one for me. Jawbreaker, Dear You.
What a great album, right?
Yeah. And the newer side of things, War on Drugs, Deeper Understanding.
Yeah.
It's definitely a really big one for me. BRMC Howl is one that sticks out.
That is a great record. I remember when they were looking for a deal for that record. And
a fantastic record.
What an incredible, really kind of bluesy. And there's so much stuff going on that album. You know what
I mean?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. And on the older side of things, you know, like, the, you know, Kinks, Muswell Hillbillies has always been a big one. Waylon, Lonesome, Henry, and Mean. Yeah, I don't know. I could do.
So there's so many, I'm sure. I love that it's really diverse too, because you have things that are like Danzig that have like a metal and darker side to them, right?
Yeah.
War on Drugs, which is really very emotional, great music, and then you got some outlaw country in there too. So it's all great. You know what I mean?
We cover the bases. You know, yeah. There'd definitely probably be some. You know, Big Youth, Screaming Target is another one that sticks out. You know,
yeah.
It runs the gamut, man. That's a tough one. That's a hard question. I got to tell you right now, I'm looking at my turntable just across the room, and I've got the new Sharon Van Etten record on.
Oh, she's great.
Dude, and I was just listening to that last night. I just kind of redid my hi-fi system here at the house, and it's nothing crazy, but it's sounding great. And just listening to side A of that new album, man, it's just so incredible. So many like just epic moments on there, you know?
Yeah, she's an amazing talent.
Absolutely.
But Jeff, listen, send my love to the family and thanks so much for doing this.
Yes. Thank you, Matt. I really appreciate it.
I want to thank Jeff Sands. What an amazing human being, an incredible guy and most inspiring. One of the most inspiring people that I know on this planet. And it was so great to have him as a guest. I'm Matt Pinfield, and I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Sound Sobriety and Success. If you like it, make sure you subscribe and hit like as well. And tell as many people about it as you can. And if you know someone in recovery or someone who's thinking about it and is struggling, please refer our podcast to them. We hope to inspire as many people as we can, not only to get on the right path, but to stay on it. And this has been Sound Sobriety and Success. If you or someone you know is struggling with alcoholism or addiction, Music Cares operates a mental health and addiction recovery program that understands the challenges music professionals face, no matter where they are in their career. Learn more, including if you're eligible, at musiccares.org. That's musiccares.org.
Sound, Sobriety, and Success with Matt Pinfield. Produced by Jake Urbanek. Engineered by Darren Silva. Jerry Onzaldo, Booking. Bill Royal, Research. Susan Axu, Marketing Production Assistant. And Laura Keeney, Marketing. Sound, Sobriety, and Success is a Bennstown McVeigh podcast production.